Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. This morning, we will continue with our month-long series on how children honor and pay tribute to their mothers for making a positive difference in their life. My guest this morning is Grammy Award nominee, singer and songwriter Karen Taylor Good. Karen and I will be having a candid conversation about her memorable moments she had with her late mom that inspired her career, her life's mission in making a positive difference in our global community. Good morning, Karen, and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here with you. And
fantastic.
Can't wait to...
I know you're calling in from California, so I know it's a little bit early over there this morning, but I appreciate you being with us. I really enjoyed listening to the various songs that I had a chance to listen that you have written and performed regarding families and mothers.
Yes.
What I'd like to get started this morning is to have you tell us a little bit about yourself. Please walk us through your life's journey from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was born and raised in El Paso, Texas.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay.
I had a very loving family. I mean, you know, they were semi-crazy like everybody's family is.
Uh-huh.
But at the basis was just a lot of love and support. My parents adored their children more than anything. And I can remember sitting out on the playground at Mesita School in El Paso, Texas, and singing to myself and making myself cry by singing. It's very interesting. And I always knew that I was a singer and had my parents' unconditional support in that, and especially my mom's. My mom, I think my mama would have loved to be a singer, but of course, living through the Depression, they never had that kind of opportunity. But we had a piano in the house, and my mama played music all the time. She played Broadway musicals. She played classical music. And they, in fact, started giving me piano lessons when I was 5,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't appreciate then, but I appreciate now. So let's see. And then I was... You know, they encouraged me to be in the orchestra in grade school and the beginning of high school, but I really found my soul and my passion and my voice, if you will,
mm-hmm.
when I joined the choir in my junior year of high school. And that's when I learned that that I kind of had something to compete with the beauty queens and the prom queens and the cheerleaders, none of which I was. One. And it wasn't really competing, it's just that I found something I could do and could do well, and it just really changed my life, actually, in that moment. So where are we now? We are in...
That changed your life, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and really from that moment, that was it. I went to college at the University of Texas in Austin, joined the, tried out for and made the big a cappella choir.
Mm-hmm.
And after my second year in college, we went on a 6-week tour in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love with Europe over there and said, when am I going to get back here? So I stayed on an additional 9 months. I waved goodbye to the rest of the choir in Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed for 9 more months. And my girlfriend Susie came over, and we had adventures, but they were all based around my voice. At that time, I was playing folk songs and playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So I auditioned for the armed services and played a bunch of service clubs in Germany for several months, and then got a job singing at a club in Athens and had plates thrown at me. Did you know that was a good thing, Johnny?
No.
Yeah, really. In Greece, if they like you, they throw plates at the bottom of the stage, not at you, actually.
Oh, okay.
And
I
then,
see.
You know, the
I've seen that.
Yeah.
No, I've seen this in some sort of a country thing where country and western thing where, you know, they have performers performing behind the chicken.
Yeah,
chicken
wire.
Like
that's
fans. Yeah, yeah, something like that where people
that's
throw things.
That's kind of scary. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's a little more classy than that in Greece.
Okay.
But yeah, then the waitress just keeps on your tab, keeps track of how many plates you break.
Really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. But I've never since that time I've been making my living with my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I am no spring chicken, as they say. So I've been in the music business quite a long time.
Very, very.
So does that take us up to now?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but let me ask you this now. The I mean, I know, you know, like every parent out there, I remember my I'm not married yet, but like my sister, for example, I know when my nephews were young, you know, mom and dad would drag them to this, to do that, and including what you said, you know, playing the piano and everything else.
Right.
How about your siblings? I mean, were they involved with all that stuff too?
That's a really good question. It seems like my brother was 10 years older, so he kind of like lived a different life, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I think he took clarinet. I think that my sister was also in the choir. She was 2 years older than I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I seem to be the only one who grabbed onto it and never let it go. Oh, you know what I forgot to tell you? When I came back from Europe,
yeah,
I came back to El Paso. It was the middle of the school year, so I didn't go back to college. I thought it was only going to be till the next semester. It turned out to be that I never went back to college because I joined a band. And then we started making records, and then we got the attention of a record producer in Memphis. We went to Memphis to record an album. I fell madly in love with the producer. We got married, and I moved to Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And that started my many years in Tennessee. And I got to Memphis and thought, well, okay, how am I going to make a living here?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked in the newspaper, and there was actually an ad in the newspaper for a studio singer. They had a jingle mill, a jingle factory in Memphis. And I went and auditioned and got the job. So we actually punched a time card at 8:30 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
went into the studio, and they would put music in front of us, and we sang whatever they put in front of us. And like, you know, WRLT, Memphis.
That's fantastic. That must be fun to do that.
El Paso. Yeah, if you hear those things on the radio and you wonder where
right.
do they come from, that's
right.
one of the places they come from. So that was really fun. I learned
yeah.
studio technique and how to use a microphone, and I did that for several years. And then I started working with musicians down the road in Nashville, and guess who my first session in Nashville, Tennessee, my first session was with? You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Lucille Ball did...
Oh,
a
my
special.
God.
She did a TV special from the Grand Ole Opry. Lucy comes to Nashville, and I got to be in the orchestra pit there with some other singers and a bunch of fine musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was such an I Love Lucy fan, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I remember watching her shows, too, when I was young. But this was back in Malaysia. We were getting black and white, and my parents love I Love Lucy because she's like really funny. She's a natural at what she's doing. You know,
wasn't that amazing that you were watching I Love Lucy in Malaysia while
yeah.
I was watching I Love Lucy in El
right
Paso
there.
In Tennessee? Wow. Now someday I want you to do a show on your childhood, and I want to tune in and listen because I just have a feeling.
Oh my God.
You're growing up. I read on your. On your website about being in the rice fields in Malaysia, yeah?
Yes, yes. My mother grew up in the rice fields in Malaysia. That's pretty much the rice bowl and from the country
wow.
and everything else. So it's quite fascinating. She has a very interesting story, as a matter of fact, you know, about meeting my dad and those kind of things, you know. So it's quite interesting.
Well, I want you to do a show on you, too. And I will listen.
But that's fantastic. So were your parents at all into, you know, were they performers? Were they singers? Was it something in the blood, or is it something that is natural for you?
Well, my father, God bless his soul, and may he rest in peace. He died in 2005. He could not carry a tune.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was tone deaf. But he loved and appreciated. He was so proud of me. Anytime I did a performance, and he was in the audience, he was just beaming with pride.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my mom, I think she did have some musical talent. Like, I think she and her sister, when they were children, used to do some, you know, amateur musical stuff.
Right.
But that was, I don't think it was really in the genes as much as having a piano around the house and hearing lots of music growing up.
But that's interesting, though, because, I mean, they had the foresight to kind of let you flavor the things what life has to offer at a very young age. And basically, you know, if you grab it, that's fine. If you don't, no big deal.
Right.
But don't ever say that you were not given the opportunity to flavor it. And I think that's fantastic.
Yes, exactly. We did that with my own daughter, of course. I kept trying everything, you know. We tried Suzuki piano. We tried Suzuki harp.
Uh-huh.
We tried ice skating. We whatever, to see what she would grab onto.
Right. That's interesting. Did your mother play? I mean, besides doing that, did your mother play, a heavy role at a very young age in terms of you being a songwriter itself? Because it's one thing singing, you know, sort of listening to a song on the radio, perhaps. I know I do that, and that's actually how I learn how to speak English in some ways, you know, to sort of like. But I can't carry a tune, obviously. But I do listen to music, and you know, and it helps me in my enunciations and stuff like that. But so did your mom play a role, at a young age for you to start writing your own tune, so to speak?
You know, my mom played a huge role in my life in every way. She was she was kind of a huge presence in my home.
Mm-hmm.
She was, she was a Leo. She was brilliant. She belonged to Mensa, the Society for Genius IQ people. And she really was like the quintessential Jewish mother. My mama was, she was very, very influential in everything I did. But actually, I didn't know that I was a songwriter. I always knew that I was a singer. But I didn't know that I was a songwriter until quite a bit later on. But of course, my mother just thought I hung the moon, and anything I did was terrific, which is a great way to grow up, you know.
I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, it looks like you got a lot of support from your mom, and you guys really connect. I want to play this wonderful song that I enjoyed listening to, and it's a beautiful song. It's that you wrote. It's called. Its title is "A Mother's Prayer," and I'm going to play it right now, and then we can continue afterwards. How's that?
Okay, great. That's good, John.
Okay, great.
I know you're listening as I lay me down to sleep. It's not for me, I ask, but my children's souls to keep. It seems the world is going crazy, and though I need to do my share, could you please take them under wing, watch over them especially, keeping them safe from everything? This is a mother's prayer. But I hold on to your light. use me to guide them day by day. This is a mother's prayer. I know I can't do this by myself. I thank you for your
Karen, that's a beautiful song. Can you tell us your thoughts about writing this song and how it resonates with every mom who listened to it?
Yes, I'd love to tell you about the song. First of all, I wrote that song with Melissa Manchester, and that's actually her playing the piano. I was writing for Warner Chappell in Nashville, and Melissa was a Warner Chappell writer in L.A. She was coming to town, and they put us together. So I met her the first day, and of course I had been a huge fan of hers, and it happened to be the day after the Columbine shootings in Colorado.
Wow.
And we were both, I don't know if you remember that, how shocking
yeah.
that was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like all of us up until that day used to think, at least when I send my child to school, they're going to have 6 hours of being completely safe. So it was really shocking to both of us. Melissa has 2 children and I have 1. So we just started talking about it and knew that we needed to write a song about, you know, that now we need to ask for heavenly help to keep our children safe. So that's where the song came from. I'm so proud to have written it with Melissa because she's such a beautiful person. And she now ends her concerts with that, which I'm proud of.
You have the situation here that I feel, even though, like, say again, I don't have any family of my own just yet, but I could certainly connect with that, the prayer, because I think, to me, when I heard that song, I mean, I, you know, it makes me think about my mom praying twice a day. For the family, and I'm sure she's not
really
asking anything for herself, but asking for the
right.
family.
Right, and absolutely. I think once you become a mother, which, by the way, I never thought I would. I was so sure I was never going to have a kid or never wanted to, and I'm so grateful that something happened and made me change my mind. But, yeah, the safety of your child or your children becomes the foremost thing on your mind and in your heart and in your prayers always.
Yeah. I mean, it just sort of it got to me from that perspective. It makes me understand, you know, about how I guess women or mothers think. You know, you had mentioned about me writing my book and everything else, and about my
right.
9 moms and everything else. But the most important thing when I talked to them and in terms of doing this book was, every one of them told me that as a woman, your entire life changed, certainly if not at inception, but certainly at birth, that the most important person in your life is the child.
Well, that's true.
And it's, it's just truly, you know, I don't think people can really relate to that if you're not a mother.
Yeah, I think it's true. I never thought in all the years before I had my daughter that literally I would be able to take a bullet, for example, for somebody or stand in front of a train or, you know, it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's how I feel about my Rachel, is that I would do anything to be sure that she was safe. And I do pray for her all the time.
This is something really cute. I just want to mention this to you. And I happened to catch this on a talk show one time. You know, Gene Simmons of KISS. And he mentioned one time, because it was along those lines, some sort of a question. And he was asked, you know, about love and those kind of things about his kids and all that. And he says, you know, when I was growing up, my mom used to tell me he would throw herself in front of a bus to save me. And I look at my mom like, you know, you got to be crazy. Yeah. Like, what? You know, are you going to do this? And then he said when he became a father, he understood what his mom was saying then.
Yeah.
And so it was quite very interesting about understanding something that's beyond, you know, the immediate thing, so to speak. You know, we're not really connected. Well, as a mother, were you prepared for motherhood?
Not at all. No, it was terrifying. And God bless my mother. I remember she came to Nashville and helped me give Rachel her first bath in the kitchen sink, I remember, because
oh,
I was terrified. I was terrified. Here was this little infant thing, and I'm like, how do I bathe this? You know, I was one of these kids. I never babysat. I didn't like children. I did, and as I said, I never wanted a child. I thought, totally unprepared for motherhood. But it does kind of come fast to you, except that first bath is kind of scary.
I'm sure it is. It's just amazing on how that your entire life changed, though, afterwards, and then you realize that, you know, like, wow, you're in a different mode, so to speak, and so that's the interesting part. This next song that I want to play, it's very, very interesting because when I first heard it, it put a smile on my face because I'm reminded of who I was when I was a teenager. And it's titled Heart of My Heart. And we'll talk afterwards, okay?
Okay.
Precious child, my baby soft and sweet, you loved to hold my hand, always looked up to me, but life will not stand still, and babies turn 14, one day we're friends, the next we're enemies. I see your growing pain, but it's not just you that hurts. You don't know who I am, and I miss who you were. Where did you go? Will you come back? I see you changing, and I can't change that. If you're still in there, please let me. The smartest mom, I was the very best. Now I embarrass you. Now I'm an idiot. You think I'm too damn old to understand your pain. Maybe I am. I'd listen anyway. I'll love you till the day I die. And even after that, what happened? the child who loved me back. Where did you go? Who's in your skin? Sometimes I see you when you disappear again. If you're still in there, please let me know. Heart of my heart, where did you go? I know this is the way it's meant to be. Doesn't make it any easier on me. Where did you go? Please send me a sign. I sure could use a little peace of mind. I know you're in there. Why not come home? Heart of my heart. Heart of my heart. Where did
another beautiful song. What inspired you to write that one?
Oh, Johnny, my precious. So we were just talking about my precious little baby, Rachel. And actually, this song comes with a CD that comes inside a book that I wrote. And the chapter that deals with this song is called Teenage Mutant Alien Pod Person. Because something happened, you know. I talk about when she was an infant and when she was a toddler and up to the time that she was 10, 11, she just adored me and we were so close and we used to go shopping together and movies together and to brownies together and I was just so important to her and I could do nothing wrong. And then adolescence set in and those hormones started raging and all of a sudden I could do nothing right. And she turned into this little monster person. It was so awful. You know, she would look at me. I mean, she had one of those very difficult adolescence periods where, it ripped my heart out, actually. And I know that a lot of parents go through this when their kids enter that, those horrible, they say the terrible twos. No, it's the terrible, 12 through whatever, 16, and sometimes through 20, and sometimes...
Right.
So that was just painful, and I needed to write about it.
It's beautiful, though. I when I heard that song, and it just, like I said, so much, it reminded me of my teenage years. Of course, I didn't really rebel or anything like that, but you have to understand, and I'm sure you went through, because this affects all of us, because when we hit puberty, we somehow found enlightenment, don't you think?
Wow.
We know it
I'm
all.
Not sure. Oh, of course. I hear what you're saying. Oh, of course. Yes, Rachel thought she knew absolutely everything. But you know what, Johnny? I want to tell you something about this song that I just remembered.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you that my daughter took some very hard turns in her adolescence. She ended up being kicked out of high school, getting into drugs, and ended up, thank God, we found a school in Nashville for kids going in recovery. So she's going to this small, wonderful school where they have 12-step meetings every day, where they have therapy every day, and it was a wonderful school. Well, guess what song became like their favorite song of these kids? It was this song, The Heart of My Heart, because they had never thought about or understood what it was like for their parents to go through when they were going through their terrible adolescent years.
Right.
I thought that, to me, that was like winning the best award for this song, knowing that these kids heard it and got it.
Right. Well, what I see, though, because this is your gift from God in the sense that you're able to put things together, because over the years you have written some like 700 songs or so, and a lot of your songs are all about some of life's really difficult topics. And, you know, to some it might be considered as your music is sad. Is that so?
No, although there is something about my voice. Before I knew that I was a songwriter, I made a good living. I kept an apartment up in Chicago, and then I was singing some, you know, in addition to getting to sing with Dolly Parton, like on the Best Old Whorehouse in Texas soundtrack, and I sang with all kinds of people. I also was making a lot of money singing jingles. I sang about Taco Bell, and I sang about, but I always, I would have trouble sometimes. Mm-hmm. We would have auditions for these, you know, Barbie doll commercials and Saturday morning. And these were ones I really wanted to get because you can make great money for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I would go in the studio and audition for these sweet little songs, and it never failed. In the control room, they would punch the talk button and say, Karen, we're all in here crying. Can you sing this any differently? Because that's not going to work for these Saturday morning Barbie doll commercials. And I used to get I would get so unhappy. I'd like talk to God and say, "Hey, what's going on here? You know, why'd you give me this voice that makes people cry when all I want to do is sing Barbie doll commercials?" And and then when I became a songwriter and started writing songs that help people get in touch with their emotions, it's the voice that helps. So it all came together once I was given the gift of being a songwriter. Because now, no, it's not a bad thing at all. I have people thank me often for that they weren't able to grieve the loss of their parent or this issue until they heard a song and the voice, and then it helped them. So, yeah, my songs make people cry a lot. But it's not because they're so bad.
No, I think that you had this unique gift, ability. The very first song that I listened to that you wrote is actually The Life That's Chosen Me. You could write, you could take it any way you want, but, you know, perhaps you can kind of walk us through a little bit about that, the song that you wrote, The Life That's Chosen Me, a little bit, and then I'll tell you my take of it.
Sure. I actually wrote that song for my friend Randy and his wife and his family. He has two autistic sons. And I had never been close to anybody with autistic children. I had no idea the challenges that he and his wife Cheryl faced until I talked to him. And, you know, he talked about most of their friends falling off the planet, most of their family, people sort of abandoning them because it was so difficult. And what I thought about was, think of how many songs and stories are written. And, you know, you have your Special Olympics for the children with special needs. There's a lot of stuff out there for kids with special needs. But I had never heard anything for the parents. Mm-hmm. So in the chorus of this song, it says, you know, I'm a parent just like you, it's true, but I have special needs. Mm-hmm. Talking about having a special needs child and what it does. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, the title, you know, the life that chosen me. This is maybe not the life I would have chosen, but it's the life that's chosen me.
Right.
So that's where that came from. What was your take on it?
It reminded me, of course, when I was in college, actually I had the opportunity to work with some individuals during the Special Olympics. And, of course, my initial reaction as, I guess, you know, I don't know whether we are normal or anything like that, but say, for example, if we consider ourselves being normal, my first reaction was, oh, my gosh, you know, like I'm watching myself to be prim and proper or whatever you want to call it to make sure that I don't offend anyone. And then I realized that these individuals are very, very loving, very honest, sincere. We tend to, in some ways, sugarcoat ourselves.
Right.
Because, you know, so it's a different approach from that perspective. So it reminded me of the time that I spent during that Special Olympic period, and it was very refreshing for me. And then the other take that I had from the song is because not necessarily getting into all the, you know, like say you were doing this because of the things that you've been exposed to, what I got out of it was, you know, we don't really know where our life leads us.
Right.
I mean, when you look at it, you know, when you were young and all the way to up to now, and you've done so many things in your life, and I've looked at myself, mm-hmm. I've done so many things in my life, and one of the things about I talked about with people is, can you have many careers in your life? And the answer is yes, because a career is when you put, you know, your heart and soul, your passion in anything that you do. And so, you know, the life has chosen you because when you get up the one morning and you find that, you know, wow, this is where, you know, I'm being led. Now, if you put your heart and soul and your passion into it, you know, it will just take care of itself, so to speak. So I got a different take, I guess, from it.
That's a lovely take on it, though. I like that. And I think that's true. I think life leads all of us in some very interesting directions. Sometimes I think my best challenge is just to let go and go with it and trust.
Right. Because and especially for me, because what happens is that I've always been someone that that enjoy knowing what the ending is in any movie before I go see it. It doesn't bother me. You know, like how someone would say, you know, don't tell me what the score is. You know, like, and it's like, for me, no, I want to know the score. I can still enjoy the game as much as, you know, knowing the score,
that's
who
funny.
Won. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's very interesting. No, I'm one of those people. Don't tell me the ending. Don't tell me the score.
Yeah. So for me, it's very, very different because I want to know because I guess, you know, perfection is within one's eye, you know, how to look at things. And then my various moms had to come in and just say, you know, just go with the flow. Have fun.
Right.
Life is a journey, you know, and so those are the mysteries of life that add spice to your life. And so anyway, so it's sort of like, so that song resonate with me from that perspective, the life that's chosen me. And because if someone had asked me, you're going to write a book when you're this age or whatever, you know, and this, I say, are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me, writing a book, you know, and that's not me. But then now I've chosen a different path. I mean, well, the path has chosen me. I mean,
exactly.
It's a little bit different. So it's very, very different. Well, let me ask you this. Now, among all the songs that you've written, what's among your favorite ones? Or one, perhaps, maybe, or two.
Well, you know, I used to think that my song, How Can I Help You Say Goodbye, which was a number one country song for Patti Loveless and was also recorded by Al Jarreau and Laura Branigan, and it's on karaoke machines everywhere. I used to think I'd never be able to top that one.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true. That was actually a made-up story about a made-up mother, and I do love that song. But when my mama, and I told you how amazing she was, she just passed away January 22nd, and the last 10 years of her life were very difficult, more so, I think, for those of us who loved her and around her, because, well, she ended up legally blind from macular degeneration, and we had to put her in a dementia care unit in September. So watching this once brilliant, sharp woman go into this decline, I mean, it looked bad. It looked I spent some time railing at God, saying, this is so mean. This is so unfair.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am a student of some beautiful life teachings, and they teach that everything happens for a reason, and there is perfection in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, Johnny, I couldn't find the perfection in this situation with my mother on my own. I couldn't find it with my brain and my head. So I'm so grateful. I found the answer through the writing of this song. And
fantastic.
It's absolutely my favorite song ever.
And the title of the song is?
It's called On Angel's Wings.
On Angel's Wings. Okay, we got that. We can play it right now for our listeners this morning. I have to tell you, I did listen to it before, and that's another song that just sort of catches me in terms of, you know, it makes you start thinking from the soul, and that's the beauty of it. And of course, we talk about, it seems to be writing songs that are quote unquote, the way you, you know, like you were talking about in a humorous way from people mentioning about the fact that, you know, can you put some life into it? But I think this is, you know, this is the touch. This is you, and this is your gift. So anyway, for everyone, this is On Angel's Wings.
Who had all the answers, the one I would lean on for comfort, for strength. She's never forgotten one grandchild's birthday. Now she can't remember my name. And it makes me so angry, I shake my fist and cry out to the heavenly one. Why would you play such a cold-hearted trick? I thought your job was to love. And the answer came down from above. She's gonna fly when her time here is through. First she'll have to let go of some things she can't use. 'Cause people and places, memories and faces are just way too heavy, it seems, to carry on angels' wings. This is the who saw things so clearly, the one who could pick out one crumb on the floor. She saw through a white lie, saw me through love's eyes. She hardly can see anymore. And it makes me so sad, and it just isn't fair. Why should so much be taken away? But when I cry out for all that she's lost, I silently hear someone say, she's gonna fly when her time here is through. First she'll have to let go of some things she can't use. People and places, memories and faces are just way too heavy to carry on angels' wings. And oh, the wonder she'll see, and I know she'll remember to watch over me. She's gonna fly when her time here is through. First she'll have to let go of some things she can't use. 'Cause people and places, memories and faces are just way too heavy.
Karen, it's just a beautiful song. If you had the opportunity to say something to your mom right now, what would you say?
Oh, I would thank her for loving me and believing in me and allowing me to develop my gifts and be the person I was meant to be. I would thank her for supporting me and loving me unconditionally all the years. I was so lucky to have her so long. And I actually do thank her all the time.
Let me ask you this. You know, you obviously, like I say, you did both because you were singing. You were discovering yourself that you have this talent about singing, and obviously in the course of doing that, then you start writing. And
right.
Over the years that since you've been writing and so forth, how has writing songs impacted you personally in your personal life?
Oh, my goodness. First of all, it's excellent therapy, and it's cheaper than therapy. first of all, we do a lot of co-writing in Nashville,
uh-huh.
And so I am honored to sometimes
that's the group session,
be able
to, of the therapy.
Exactly. It's like group therapy. That's right. So sometimes it's my co-writer that has some life issue or something that they want to, that they really feel like they need to express, and I get to help them, which is really, I feel honored to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because we've played three fairly serious songs, I want to tell you that I have a lot of funny songs, too, and up-tempo and positive and, you know, things like my husband accuses me of being rather a serious person, as you can tell. So I have one song that I love to do when I perform, and it's called Lighten Up, which reminds me and those of us who tend to take themselves too seriously that really life, we need to lighten up. So that's a fun song. So, yeah, see what I mean? It's therapy for me. When I start finding myself thinking too small, that I need to start thinking bigger, you know, and increase my my thoughts and my good. So I wrote a song called Get a Bigger Pan, which is about thinking big.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, writing has been a real blessing for me in my life.
Very, very interesting. Well, besides being a songwriter and a singer, you are also an author and a keynote speaker and a philanthropist. What can we expect from you for the second half of this year and beyond?
Ooh. Well, I am currently at a lovely conference, the Unity People's Conference here in San Diego, and connecting with some lovely, lovely Unity ministers from around the country. So I plan on visiting lots of them. I plan on writing lots more songs and hopefully getting some more things on the radio this year, the rest of this year. I have some very wonderful hospice fundraisers and concerts to do. Hospice has become a real passion of mine, helping hospices to raise money and do the incredible work that they do. So that's it, and continuing to love my family and be a good mom to my sweet Rachel, who is now 26 and well on her way to being on her own, but not quite yet. She's still living in our basement half time.
Hey, I mean, is that something like failure to launch kind of thing?
Kind of, but you know what? These days it's kind of a normal thing too, and I'm delighted. I love having her around.
That's the mom thing, though, kicking in. You know, it's like, I can't go. You know, you can't go. You got to stay here.
I know. It's very much a mom thing. I wouldn't mind her. Well, I shouldn't say I wouldn't mind her staying till she's 40, because I shouldn't say that.
Very interesting. How can someone get in touch with you in terms of getting more information about you and keeping up with your latest happenings?
Why, thank you for asking. My website is www.karentaylorgood.com. And, you know, I'm a Facebook person and a MySpace person, but I think my website's the best. I keep my schedule there, and I write a message on there every month at least. And if people sign up for my newsletter, then I'll keep in touch with them when I'm going to be in their area, et cetera.
Very interesting. By the way, we'll be coming towards the tail end of the show here. As for all guests that I have on my show, I usually ask them for a recipe for living. And now being the fact that you are obviously a daughter and now a mom, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Ooh, I think be exactly who you are. I think it's an amazing thing that God created each one of us. Just like snowflakes, there's no two alike. There's no two of us alike. And I think that's our only job, is to be absolutely authentically the incredible individual that we were created to be. So be real, be who you are, and take great pleasure in it.
What inspired you to come up with that wonderful recipe for living?
Well, I think all the experiences I've had in my life, including my mama's amazing love. I do have one of my favorite songs is called Real, which is just about that. Just take off the mask and be real. And, of course, many years of therapy have helped, too, while we're talking about therapy.
Oh, interesting. Well, has your daughter picked up in your steps as far as, you know, being in, I guess, you know, a songwriter or even a singer for that matter?
Actually, she is both, and she creates some very interesting music on her computer. She's into the drum and bass world, which I didn't even know what it was until Rachel introduced me to it. And, you know, it's very different from what I do, but she has a beautiful voice. And a lot of people from around the world are asking her to put her sweet voice on their driving drum and bass tracks, which I find fascinating.
Very interesting.
But yeah, she's a very talented young lady.
You guys plan to do anything together?
You know, we have written. I've brought Rachel in on several of my songs. She has. I just love the way she thinks musically too. It's very different from where I would go. And yeah, she's been asking me lately to help her with some lyrics. So it'll be interesting to see what we can come up with together.
How has that developed, though, in terms of, and you brought up something very interesting here, because now she's asking you for help in terms of lyrics and everything else. Did your mom help you with some lyrics when you were writing?
You know, actually my mom she wrote some poetry, and she was a funny woman, too. And she actually one time did send me an idea for a song that I ended up incorporating into a song. And I believe it was called Don't Call Me, I'll Call You.
And that's from a mom. Boy, you must be calling her a whole lot for her to say that.
I know. No, trust me, she wasn't talking about me. She loved to have me phone her all the time.
I understand. I'm just teasing.
Yeah. No, but Mama had a great sense of humor, so yeah, but we never actually sat down and collaborated on a song. I wish we had. That would have been fun.
I think from what I could gather, based on talking with you close to about an hour now, is that she was obviously a very strong, determined woman, and you know, it's sort of that subconscious leadership kind of thing, the energy that she exudes. That she's very, very confident, and obviously that rubbed off with you quite nicely, because you were, you know, yourself are very confident because of all the things you have done in Europe and, of course, here in the States. So looking back, very interestingly, how much of your mom you have within you?
Yeah, my mama was, she was a strong and powerful woman. Anytime there was some social issue happening in El Paso or in the world that she didn't feel was fair, my mama was out the door with a petition. She was she really was fearless. She went off when I was a junior in high school and my sister had just started college. She got a scholarship to go get her master's degree, and she actually went off to California by herself for a year and got her master's degree Yeah, my mama really was a strong, amazing woman. I'm proud to, I hopefully be following in her footsteps. And it sounds like your mama was too.
Yeah, in a way, because I think the strength that she gave me was the fact that, you know, one of the things that she mentioned to me is that in every one of us, there's a seed of greatness. And the seed of greatness is the key to our successes. And the genius in us helps us to identify our various dream goals and desires. And the talent in us helps us to accomplish them with a heartfelt passion. And this is from someone who basically grew up during the time where a woman is not allowed, well, not necessarily in her generations and the lifestyle that she grew up with. You know, she, as soon as you're old enough, you hit kitchen 101, which is spending time in the kitchen and cooking and everything else. Of course, in her case, she just loved it, you know, doing that. And so, but there's a tremendous amount of education that you get being in the kitchen, because during that time, we're not talking about microwave cooking here. We're talking about building fires from wood, charcoal, those kind of things, and no 2 days are alike. You know, so it's just very, very different. And there's a lot of things that you learn, you know, within building one's character, so to speak. And so that's the unique thing. And I'm sure in your case, even like in your mom, when you look back, the things that she encountered herself, and obviously, you know, your dad was very supportive of her, giving her that sort of her own private sanctuary.
Right.
And so it's beautiful.
It is. And I love the title of your book and your show, because my mama and I spent some lovely time in her kitchen, too. And she taught me how to make chicken soup and matzo balls. And to this day, when anybody that I love is sick, what do I do if I'm home and have the time? I will make a pot of chicken soup and matzo balls for them.
Fantastic.
And I swear it really does make them better, I swear.
Fantastic. Well, you see, that's the thing about, you know, being in the kitchen, because when I was growing up, well, my sister was quite the opposite, because she was that sort of during that women's movement kind of thing where, you know, we don't hang out in the kitchen, Korea and those kind of things, versus me. I mean, we were so much different in age in the sense that, well, you know, I enjoy hanging out in the kitchen because I'll be the official food taster for the family. You know? And of course, my mom likes to feed me too. So, you know, that worked out very, very well. And that carried over to United States when I met all these eight other wonderful women that we were able to spend quality time conversing in the kitchen. And so that whole concept of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living, came out from the idea of, you know, actually it was out of selfishness, because I was trying to write a book about preserving food recipes. And in the course of doing that, I was spiritually inspired to write a book that I finished in 9 months about motherly love instead, because that's what that tied all of us together, basically. And it took me 7 years to kind of get to the point to go ahead and get started with the book, because my 90-year-old Italian foster mom from Papa Bluff, Missouri, called me up in January of 2007 and said that, you know, Johnny, are you going to finish writing the book before I die? And I said, of course, definitely.
Wow.
So anyway,
that got
make
you moving,
so it got me moving, and so it's very, very exciting, you know. Well, Karen, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Thank you for the great recipe for living and spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. It's wonderful to have you here. To all our listeners, thank you for being with me this morning and being with Karen. Please join me next Tuesday morning as we continue with our series on how children honors and pay tribute to their moms for making a positive difference in their life. My guest will be Amy Wilson, author and performer of the off-Broadway hit Motherlode. According to Amy, after 7 years of raising kids, she has an overriding daily thought: she sucks at being a mother. Amy and I will be discussing her new book, When Did I Get Like This?, her funny, enduring celebration of a mother's quest to provide what is best for her kids in the age of too many options. For additional information about this show, the shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening this morning. Have a great week. Karen, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thanks, Johnny.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.